Welcome to China Manufacturing Decoded from Sofeast, the podcast where we take you through some of the major topics facing importers and manufacturers in China today. Hi again, listener. Adrian from Sofeast here, just quickly introducing today's episode, which is episode 53. In this episode, Renault is interviewing Greg Fleming, who is an experienced merchandising and manufacturing operations manager in the apparel industry, who's based in Vietnam. They're going to be talking about a number of topics, but in particular, digitizing processes to reduce waste, reduce costs, to speed things up, and a lot of the very attractive things that we're looking for as importers today. Right, that's enough from me. Let's get into the interview.
Hello, everybody. This week in the podcast, I'm talking with Greg Fleming, who is originally from New Zealand, moved to Australia in the 90s, then moved to China, then moved to Vietnam. And I'm talking to him today. He's in Ho Chi Minh City. He's been managing the merchandising and manufacturing operations of a number of companies over the years. He's worked mostly in apparel, garments, all throughout from fabric production to garment manufacturing to retail, a very wide experience here. And well, I'd like to welcome him to the show. Hi, Greg. How are you doing?
Good, Renaud. How are you?
Yeah, pretty good.
Thank you for the opportunity.
So you're based in Ho Chi Minh City. So how, first, I guess everybody asks you this question, how is the COVID situation there?
So we've had a little bit of a blip over the last 2 weeks, mainly in the north. A lot of the viruses that have occurred over the last 2 weeks have been through people coming in from China via Laos. And coming into the country illegally. We've had about 550 new cases. About 450 of those are import cases, and about 100 are local cases. Okay. But the government
has been a big spike for Vietnam, right?
Yeah, but the government has been very proactive in the management. The contact tracing in Vietnam is extensive and quick and fast. And if you are anywhere between Vietnam have a system called F0, F1, F2. So F0, you are the person. F1 is someone that's been directly in contact with you. F2 is that someone that has been in direct contact, has been in contact with you. So they pretty much trace out to F3. And they will test you. They will isolate you. So I think at the moment there's around 100,000 people in isolation. So pretty much under control. That's why I call it a blip.
Yes. Okay. Yes. Well, China also had very strong reactions last year when there was what you call a blip in one area, testing all of Qingdao or blocking everything around Shijiazhuang and so on. So very strong reaction, very strict controls. Okay, so you think that this is under control? There is no lockdown?
Yeah, so Vietnam is very strict on face mask wearing. So even if you ride a motorbike on the street, you have to wear a face mask. If you go into any building, you have to wear a face mask. You can't congregate more than 10 people. So very, very strict.
Yeah. Wow. Okay. Well, that's interesting.
But the whole thing is that in Vietnam, there is no pushback. Everyone knows that, okay, we've got to do this. And yes. People do it as part of their normal life. So it's no real issue.
Right, right. It's not like in Europe or in the US or other countries, right?
No, there's no Karens, there's no princesses here.
Right, right. cool. So you've had experiences working with Chinese suppliers, Chinese manufacturers, and then also Vietnamese manufacturers. You've worked worked in country for years. What are the one or two main differences? I thought that's quite interesting. The one or two main differences of working with Chinese versus Vietnamese manufacturers.
So Vietnam factories are very much accommodating. If you are open with them, if you are honest with them, and if you are, if they feel that you want to be a partner with them, they will accommodate you. Whereas in China, they're very regimented because they've had so much ability for so long to be in control of the situation.
Right.
Be in control of the minimums, be control of what gets produced, not very flexible. Whereas Vietnam are so I look at it this way. In China, you've had two generations, three generations have been told, do this, do this, do this, do this, don't think. Whereas Vietnam is the complete opposite. So after the war, the government basically said, we don't know what to do. You guys sort it out for yourselves.
Right.
So that's what the evolution of factories have been. And it continues today.
Interesting. Well, I mean, in China, there's been quite a few different models. I mean, if you look at, you know, the more entrepreneurial factories in Wenzhou or in Shantou versus, you know, the much more regimented sometimes factories, and some of them want to do everything into the small details like Huawei. I mean, there it's a huge country, of course. There's quite a bit of difference, but I hear what you say. They like to be in control of the process. When they're the supplier, they will say, nah, that's the way we do business. No. That's whatever, you know.
So when you look at China, so it went from Hong Kong to Shenzhen.
Right.
Then it moved up the East Coast.
Yeah.
Then it moved west.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So you're right. I know lots of factories in Shenzhen, Duanguan, Guangzhou, those kinds of areas that will work with people. Mm-hmm. But the same parameters, be honest, be open, and be clear. So, but from Vietnam, that's pretty much on most factories.
Yeah, okay, well that is a big difference.
Yeah, so there is a definite cultural difference,
right,
around how you work with a client. So like, for example, 3 years ago, when everything was booming, right? So Vietnam was like, great. People were coming to Vietnam left, right, and center. Lots of people came to me and said, hey, look, can you introduce me to great factories? Which I did. And 80% of the time, the answer was, hey, look, we would love to, but we're full.
Yeah.
So they're very clear on where they're at.
Yeah. But whereas Chinese suppliers would say, yeah, come in. And then
exactly.
Where are we going to cut the fabric? Where are we going to sew the garments? Where are we going to do the packing? Maybe we can do the packing in-house.
Yep.
Right. Yes, absolutely. Pretty interesting. You mentioned that Vietnam factories, we talked a little bit offline before recording this podcast, and you mentioned that actually very few factories in Vietnam, in apparel, in furniture, in a number of different sectors, very few factories have adopted, have digitized their processes, have adopted a good ERP, have adopted maybe an MES system for managing what happens on the shop floor, and so on and so forth, have adopted a good PLM system for new product development, right? So what are the main obstacles to this? What have been the main obstacles in Vietnam?
So there's two parts of this. One, there is adoption.
Mm-hmm.
Adoption, there is pretty good adoption within multinationals. So the bigger companies, the multinationals that have come from Sri Lanka, from Hong Kong,
mm-hmm.
that are here. So they bring in their technology.
Yeah.
So that uptake is part of the company.
Mm-hmm.
But it's that uptake is only corporate uptake, not necessarily factory uptake. So when I mean factory uptake is that Vietnamese people are very proud and they're very smart and they don't want something shoved down their throat.
Mm.
So whilst most multinationals, I would say, when I say most, I would say 98%, 99% have some sort of information technology. Their usage is around 5%.
Oh, wow.
Because on the floor, management and middle management don't get it, don't understand it, don't see the value. So culture is a very important thing here when you're implementing information technology.
Hmm. So follow the process, get their buy-in, explain why the company needs to do that and what it means for them and so on, right?
You know, I could go through this in forever around, I've seen number of times where multinationals have tried to implement technology, Vietnamese people have gone, nah, it's not going to work, and they've forced it. I've been in situations where I've gone to my teams and said, okay, guys, I get what you're feeling, I get what you're saying, but we have to facilitate what they need. So let's say, give it to us, we'll break it, and we'll fix it, and we'll give it back to you. And I've had that happen 4 times, and it's worked. So the other part of the detail is that information technology in apparel is so different to information technology if you're wanting to make an iPhone or a car or a pair of sunglasses or whatever, because SKUs are different. There are so many variations of SKUs,
sure,
that there are so many things that are going on that most ERPs don't get. There are other than Infor and SAP HANA S4, there are no apparel specific ERPs. So from a information technology point of view, the only real company other than, so things like Gerber, they have a PLM part of their process. There are companies like Tuk Tuk, but the best at the moment is pretty much Coats Digital. Coats Digital has a great ecosystem that allows you to grow your information technology uptake. And it can be gradual depending on your appetite for change. So that kind of equates to, if you're a foreign national, you're just bringing technology in and pushing it down someone's throat. If you're a Vietnamese company and you want to bring in information technology, you've got to look at what is the cultural and process change that is going to relate to the uptake of information technology. And I think those are the key criteria that people are missing out on.
Mm. So that's COATS,
COATS. Yeah, so Coats Digital is the information technology arm of Coats Threads, you know, 150, 200-year-old British company that 20 years ago, 15 years ago, saw what was going to happen. So like when I look at it like that, here's a company that's 200 years old, they took a step back and say, this is what's going to happen down the pipe. And they were right.
Hmm. We don't hear that very often.
Yeah. Most
companies innovative themselves, basically. Yeah. Wow. Oh, yeah, they're a thread manufacturer. Wow. 250 years of fashion expertise. Yeah. I can put it on their website.
So Coach Digital have really good apparel PRM, PLM. Mm-hmm. So raw material libraries, production libraries. So you can create bill of materials for multiple styles. They can connect to 3D. So, you know, when you think about it, you've got designers sitting around the world today that can't travel, and you've got to create a garment.
Mm.
And like this whole thing around digital transformation needs to focus on reducing the cost of doing business. And examples like, there was a study done about, I think it was a 2008 by Alvinon, which is a fit company based in Hong Kong. And it takes...
The models, yeah. The
fit models. They did a study that said on average, it takes 4.8 prototypes to go from concept to production approved.
Mm-hmm.
Each of those prototypes costs $6,000.
Mm.
Right? So then you're spending 20 grand trying to get samples from either China or Vietnam or Sri Lanka or wherever to the US, there and back. You've got all that cost. Use digital technology. You can go, you can do everything from lab dip approval to everything can be done digitally. You don't have to send a lab dip. You don't have to send a prototype. Do it digitally in 3D until you've got 95, 98% good. Make a sample, then send it. But do everything in country. So, yeah, there is a lot to be done in the changing of the way we do business to alleviate the cost of doing business.
Oh, yeah. Well, and you come at that from garments, from the apparel industry, but imagine furniture makers. How do they even FedEx their
same thing. So like from a furniture point of view, if you take someone like, so Centric Software.
Mm-hmm.
So Centric Software is probably the best PLM software. So most of furniture revolves around PLM because furniture is very complicated and it's dimensional.
Mm.
So, you know, you've got to get your dimensions and furniture design, product development and delivery exact because it all relates to shipping. If you can imagine shipping 1,000 sofas from Vietnam. So you're going to fit maybe 200, 300 sofas in one container. That's so the dimensions have to be precise. And then the product development information for furniture is precise. And especially when you're shipping to the US, because there are so many laws that, so for example, for furniture, if you have a book stand, so any book stand over a certain number of inches, centimeters tall must have a certain safety feature to it that it doesn't tip over. So furniture is complicated, and it's as complicated as garments. I suppose to the point is, if you want to go down a digital information transformation highway, make sure you get what is right for you.
Right. So that's an interesting topic, actually. We haven't covered that on the podcast before. So since you've implemented these types of IT systems in different companies, so let's say a company has its own processes and they are, you know, mostly documented, maybe not very mature, not very documented, you know, not into all the small details, but they have, you know, they have forms in Excel to fill out and they have processes and distribution lists and things like that. an approval process, is an escalation process, you know, what, okay. And then you say, well, we got to digitize that. You know, maybe you have 20 people in the back office where actually you might only need 10 of them to do admin work if things were digitized. If you see that, what would your first steps be? Would you first like map the processes, understand the current processes?
My first is, let's start with this. I'm a factory in Vietnam. Mm-hmm. I don't want to ever have an email from a customer asking what's going on. Mm-hmm. So, okay, what does the customer want? So the customer wants to know information about the product and detailed information. Mm-hmm. So then we go back to the beginning. Where does that all start? One of the problems in the manufacturing industry is the development of a tech pack, a specification. Mm-hmm. What do you want? Then we go to, where are the decision makers around what is acceptable and what is not? So, and let's just talk around apparel. Mm-hmm. If I'm a brand and I'm sitting in Australia, London, Los Angeles, New York, do I really want and need as many people in my office doing stuff that can be done in the place of manufacturer? You do not. I can tell you for sure, you do not. So you are better to spend, if you're a brand in one of those countries, you are better to spend your budget on people that are serving your clients and that are adding value to your clients in your country,
of course,
than having people that are trying to add value to a manufacturing country. So, example, I had an interesting discussion this morning. Apparel uses lab dips. So someone wants this fabric in this color. Normally what happens is they send a sample to a factory, make a lab dip, send it back. Mm-hmm. The cost of that is about $500. Crazy.
Mm.
So you send me what you want. I will tell you if I can match it. If I can't match it, we'll come to an agreement. So I say I can match it. Give me the Pantone color. Mm-hmm. Pantone color goes into the data color. Data color can perform, can give you a recipe for the color. So therefore you have the color. So if the end sample comes out within a certain delta of the color, you don't need to send it again.
Yeah.
It's like simple technology.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but most, I know some, or I have known some designers that, at least at the time, were not very comfortable with that. They would need to see, you know, the exact fabric in at least that size, not too small, in the right color before they would approve of it. You think it's all wrong?
So 5 or 6 times in my career, I have got very frustrated at this whole process. Mm-hmm. One of the biggest times was when I was in Australia and I was managing supply and sourcing of about 6 brands. And I had all these young girls that were approving or disapproving of color.
Mm-hmm.
I went to HR and said, look, this is crazy. I want to colorblind test these people. So I colorblind tested them. 98% of them were colorblind to at least 3 colors.
What?
So I've got a machine that is 100% correct 100% of the time. And you want to test the machine? That's crazy.
Yep. Well, yeah, there are tests, of course, to see how
colorblind.
How good people are at distinguishing differences between colors. And Yes, we've had issues like that. Sometimes an inspector is extremely good, is in the top, what, 2 or 3%, right? That at distinguishing differences, and then she would say, no, this is a defect, this is not conform.
Exactly.
And then the factory looks at it and like, I don't really see the difference. And then they start to
Exactly.
fight. And then sent to the customer, and the customer wants to defend their inspector. So they say, well, yeah, there's a little difference. You know, the inspector's right.
So a lot of them, people have used light boxes for a long time. So TL65, all those kind of different color monitors, right? So even those are subjective because unless you replace the bulbs every month and do things like that, it's not the right test. Data color is a computer. The computer reads the color.
Yeah, you just make sure you verify it from time to time with a better standard. That's it.
And that it's calibrated.
Yeah, you verify and recalibrate. Yeah. So what you're saying is that you eliminate a lot of the sending back and forth of pre-production samples. At least for the color, you can basically eliminate that. What you're saying is that the designers, instead of seeing the exact fabric and the exact color, they will see the color on
No,
the
so
screen.
but that's the thing around with information technology and high definition photography, the designer product developer can see the exact fabric in the exact color. So they and with good raw material libraries, they can see it in 3D. It's not a one dimensional. So good PLMs have raw material libraries that are 3D, so you can actually see the fabric moving. So, and that's what most designers want to see.
And then that means also the at the factory level, they need to have the right camera, they need to have some of that same equipment, right? I mean, they need to have that equipment to record the exact color.
So it's not so much, so the cameras are pretty easy. You don't need that high level, but it's how it's transferred within the system to the customer. So the point is that I'm not saying is that 100% is digital. There will have to be a physical garment made at the end, but let's wait until we've got everything 95, 98% right before we put a sample into the sample room and make a garment and send it.
So what you're saying is
But
instead of
even to the point of let's be smart about this. Let's get to 95%. Let's make a garment. And let's put it on a body, a real person in the factory, and have a conference call by video of someone, a human person, wearing the sample in the factory, and let's get your opinion before we spend $200 to send it somewhere.
Yeah, and wait for a week before we start to get feedback. Interesting. Okay. So what you're saying is basically start you would start to digitize processes around where it will add how to say at the factory level, you would start to make sure that all of the product information, at least as much as possible, is digitized, and you would start by that side, by the PLM side.
I'm talking about reducing the cost of doing business. So I'm talking about reducing the cost of doing business at a product development side that allows a factory to facilitate what a merchandise plan is from a retail merchandise planner to how much they want to buy. Because today, the whole premise of merchandise financial planning is out the window because the data that they have had for the last 3 years, which is the basis of a merchandise financial plan at retail, is irrelevant because people's tastes changed. So So a merchandise financial planner wants to go, hey, I'm not going to put all my money in this style. Let's try some things. Let's have a little bit of this, a little bit of that.
Mm.
Then if you reduce the product development cost, that allows the factory to essentially put in place mass customization. So for me, the days of 5,000 per style, per color, they're gone. So you want to be able to do 500, 600, 700s, right?
Yeah.
So,
yes,
sure. So information technology gives you that ability, but everyone's got to work together.
Right. No, that's for sure.
So it's about creating ecosystems with your fabrics, with your trims, with your raw materials, figuring out what the brand wants to do. So there are so many components, and you can't do that in Excel.
No.
Or email.
Right. Yeah, no, or FedEx. Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Staying on that topic, and that's my last question to you, and to staying on the topic of process digitization, do you see, and we talked about this a little bit offline, do you see the customs and the importing countries and the legislators in the importing countries starting to demand more, let's say, irrefutable evidence of certain things when it comes to social compliance, when it comes to whether their cotton comes from a certain province west of China, whether all of these operations were really not made in China, it's really made in Vietnam, for example, kind of product. Do you see a big risk that some countries start to demand proofs of all of this, and how, what would the solution be for that?
For sure. So at some time in the near future, both Europe and the US, so the EU is currently implementing laws into the EU.
Right.
Physical laws saying things like prove sustainability, prove country of origin, prove non-slave labor. They will be laws. They will be laws in the next 12 months. At some stage, very soon. So an example would be Vietnam. Vietnam, EU trade agreement, country of origin. Country of origin is extremely pivotal in Vietnam's ability to obtain 100% tax-free into Vietnam. It is very clear over the last 7-10 years of the 100% materials, 100% of the garments exported from Vietnam, 85% of the raw material comes from outside of Vietnam.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, mostly so, China. Yeah.
Right. So now the EU is going to start saying, huh, you're claiming 100% of country of origin. Prove it. And the factory is going to go, oh, I've got an invoice. I've got a certificate of origin. And customs are going to go, nah, don't accept it.
Mm-hmm.
Counterfeiting is so easy. So you got to prove it. Right. So as an example of why is this so important, if Kering and Louis Vuitton, Moët Hennessy are spending billions of dollars on blockchain to facilitate anti-counterfeiting, that means it's important. So that trickle down is going to be important. And information technology that is essentially based on blockchain is the only way that you can provide is stop that from happening. So to me, if I'm a business owner, I'm going, what is my risk mitigation? Risk mitigation is information technology.
Well, very interesting. Thanks a lot, Greg. I guess you give a lot of topics for people to think of. Hopefully we open the eyes of a few companies that will go down that path.
Hey, look, and Bruno, I think you guys are doing a great job. You guys are doing a great job of trying to communicate around that it's not so easy to do what we do. So you guys are doing a good job.
Yeah. If people want to reach out to you, we'll put a link to your LinkedIn profile.
No problem.
In the show notes. Is that sure. Good?
No problem.
Yeah. So you're Greg Fleming in LinkedIn if people want to look for you.
No problem.
All right. Well, thanks a lot. That was a good one.
Take care. Enjoy the evening.
Greg. Yeah.
Thank you.
To the listeners, well, talk to you next week then. Thanks.
Hope they enjoyed.
Thanks for joining us. If you've enjoyed today's podcast, don't forget to like and share, and you can subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and all other places that you get your podcasts from. See you next time.